From the boardroom to the shop floor, good business runs on good governance. Join esteemed expert in governance, Dr. Nimrod Mbele, for the next hour as he takes us beyond governance, making sense of doing business in South Africa.
A very good evening and to you, the beloved listener of Beyond Governance here at 101.9 High FM. My name is Nimrod Mbele. It is an honor once again to share this space and time with you as we journey and navigate the challenges and opportunities that are presented in our country's economy. As we step into the new year, I want to start by sharing a message of hope and resilience for all South Africans. Despite the hurdles we face in addressing unemployment, poverty, and inequality in our nation, we have a profound strength rooted in diversity, unity, and shared vision for a brighter tomorrow. In my view, the Government of National Unity serves yet as a catalyst to overcome legacies of apartheid, compounded by hijacking of democratic agenda by a group of thugs, you know, masquerading as legitimate public officials and businessmen and women while siphoning public resources. As we proceed, a shout out goes to matriculants, as you've heard from Michael McKenna, that the Minister of Basic Education has been celebrating the achievement. We just want to echo those kinds of vibration and say congratulations to the matric of 2024, to those as they are stepping into the next chapter of their life, whether it is university, college, or technical vocation. This is the beginning of a journey filled with opportunities to grow, learn, and make a difference. Embrace it with courage and curiosity, I would add. To those who didn't get the results they hoped for, I would say failure is not an end. It's simply a redirection, I beg your pardon. Every great success story is filled with moments of challenges and perseverance. Take time to reassess, replan, and regain your strength. Your dreams are still valid, and your future is still very, very bright. As we proceed here at Beyond Governance, we continue to explore how effective governance and leadership can pave the way to a better South Africa. Together, we'll unpack some of these issues and seek solutions, because there's no point of identifying challenges but without instigating the need to change, and you and I are party to co-creating those kind of solutions. Before we get into the gist of thought-provoking conversation with Rob, whom I will introduce very shortly, let me dispense with words of gratitude. Thank you very much, Craig Guthrie, who is on a controller. Betty, once again, compliments and thank you so much for producing the show and sourcing insightful guests such as Rob Hutchison, who is the founder of Dear South Africa. And last but not least, Michael McKenna, thank you so much and Michael McKenna as well as the Overdrive team for doing start and back. He is back on your radio tomorrow. Do stay tuned. As I've indicated earlier, in tonight's conversation, I am joined by Rob Hutchison, who is the founder of DA South Africa, which is a public participation platform that empowers citizens to have a voice in matters of governance and policy making. To this end, I'm going to be asking Rob, what has been the impact of the interventions in strengthening public participation? I'm sure this is something that is close to your heart. If it is as close as it is to me, I urge you to weigh in on our conversation. Our WhatsApp line is 061-895-1019. And of course, your views and thoughts are always welcome via my X handle, which is _@DrMbele. In setting the scene, I just want to create this picture. We all know that personally, the biggest indicator of any vibrant democracy is an early election. We noted the voter turnout was about 58%, with 16.3 million casting their votes. Given that there were approximately 27 registered voters, which means we had about 11 eligible voters who did not vote. And that's a staggering figure. And it's quite scary because the basis for any public participation is one of, in my view, that's one of the biggest indicators. So clearly the low turnout indicates that not only 40% of the eligible voters were engaged in processes, and this signifies a serious decline. So from that point of view, I will take this opportunity to welcome Robin and thank him for his time in joining Beyond Governance on a very first show for 2024. Rob, good evening and welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Lovely. I've obviously indicated just broad stroke, given the bigger picture in terms of the voter apathy. Perhaps maybe you could just unpack for us that what in your view, what accounts for the low turnout, voter apathy?
Apathy. Yeah, apathy is a major problem in civil society as a general, even in any democracy. It's as the electorate loses confidence in the governance ability of the nation, they withdraw. They withdraw and they give up. It's pretty much like the unemployment. You know, people, when you lose your job, you start looking for another job initially, and then after a while you give up hope and you stop looking. It's the same when it comes to voting. So it's a combination of poor governance, of distrust in the government, and a distrust in the entire system in general. So it will go on to reflect onto other parties and opposition parties. Also, everybody starts coming to question, and people just give up. They just don't want to participate in a democracy anymore. It's as simple as that.
That's quite a very scary picture. But how do we compare? How does South Africa compare, from your perspective, with the rest of the world in as far as voter apathy is concerned? Because that is just one indicator. When you zoom in, as we will be talking about other legislative environment, how do you compare with other countries?
We're pretty much on a par with other countries, except for where there's a great competition between parties. So for example, in the USA, you have a high voter turnout because there's a lot of competition and there's a lot of argument between the left and the right, and there's a great divide. And there's promises made from most people, and there's also a high level of education around the importance of being involved in your democracy, which is lacking in South Africa. But when it comes to more undeveloped countries, it's pretty much on a par. Although I hate referring to South Africa as a underdeveloped country, because we most certainly aren't, but it's the same sort of mindset from the populace that generates that. As you said, we have an extraordinarily high non-voter turnout, and it is getting worse and worse and worse. And that is generally because the lack of interest in it, and too many promises have been made by government, and it's just not enough delivery has aroused over those promises from all sides. So yeah, I think on underdeveloped countries, we pretty much on a par. But when it comes to first world countries, where you have a high level of education, then we are lacking sorely behind.
I'm glad, Rob, you raised the obviously variables that accounts for voter apathy in South Africa. You make reference to too many promises, people have lost jobs. As a result, they've given hope because too many promises will be made. And also made references to essential lack of confidence in leadership. We'll take a break and come back, but one of the issues that I want to highlight, which is important based on your initial reference, was the education aspect. I recall in the early 90s, we used to have supplements in every single newspaper and any other media that you can think about on the education of education of government institutions, their roles and responsibilities, the powers of electorate in terms of shaping the future they want. And we seems to have diminished, or we seems to have moved away from that particular posture of educating population about economic metrics, what is happening in and around, and how essentially your vote is important in shaping how the country's country's economic posture is going to look like. But let's take a break and come back. When we come back, we'll take it from there.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. It is now 2:01 after 6 o'clock. This is Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Mbele, and I'm in conversation with Rob Hutchison, who is the founder of DS South Africa, a platform that amplifies the voice of ordinary South Africans in policymaking processes. To this end, we're asking what has been their methodology in understanding these intricacies, and what is the impact of intervention. We'll come back to that just in a second. Before we took that particular break, the issue of education in the context of how policies are made and the extent to which the end users have to express their voices in a manner that is constructive and changes the direction of a particular policy. The reason I'm asking this, I gave a bit of a background in the past. So DS South Africa, what has been the experience of the general education of the of South Africa in relation to legislation and policies across the spectrum, whether you're in health, you're in education, or in defense, across the spectrum, what has been your observation in terms of education?
It's been sorely lacking. That's the biggest problem that I faced when I started DS South Africa is. Try and move people away from the idea that this is a petition, either for or against some policy. And it's a continuous battle. People still think that having your say means you're opposing something or supporting it. Most people think it's just an opposition to what policy comes out. So it's been a long process in trying to educate the public into getting them to understand that it's a constructive process where you have to agree or disagree or partially agree with a proposal that government has put out. And people don't seem to, initially people didn't seem to understand that a bill is just a draft version of an act, which requires public participation in order to formalize. And it's actually a constitutional right where parliament has to invite the public to be part of lawmaking. And people don't understand that. They think government has already implemented this and now we're opposing it. So it was a long journey over the past 6 or 7 years to try and get people to understand that providing documents, providing summaries of the key points, of the understanding the clauses, breaking down the issues, the pros, the cons of it, and presenting it to the public. And actually getting the public to read the documents and understand the whole process of public education and public participation. But I've seen a remarkable change, a remarkable shift in it over the 6 or 7 years. And it's good news that the people do actually now understand that it's their opportunity to get involved in the policy. And it's sort of extended the democratic process from once every 5 years during elections. People now understand that they can take part on a weekly basis during those 5 years and have their say and influence the outcome and shape their democracy. And I think it's made a shift in the general public feeling that we're not just led by people, but we, the people, are actually in charge of the way that democracy goes. We need to guide our leaders, and we have a say, and we are actually the leaders, whereas public servants, if I may say that, are serving us. But it's been a good shift there. I still think a lot of work needs to be done in educating the public, not just about the policies that are presented, but around the whole participation process and how important it is in shaping your democracy. You mentioned that we used to have a lot of educational pieces in newspapers and various other publications. I can go back even further in that and say during my days in high school, there was also education around the importance of participating in your government and having a say. We were taught a whole lot of governance issues and what the importance of government is and how we can be a part of it. That seems to be fallen apart lately. I don't see any education going that far, but I definitely think it should be. We should have a basic course in high schools, educating learners on how to participate in their democracy and how important it is for them to do so. And of course, that it does make a difference. There's still the notion out there that why should I have my say? Government won't listen to us anyway. But once you educate people and tell them that it's actually written in legislation, they have to consider every single comment that comes through, then suddenly the light goes on and okay, right, I have to have my say. And then you have to educate people again to actually read the policy and read the highlights and go through it with the constructive mind, rather than just thinking it's a yes or no vote. So I think it's a slow process, but definitely more work needs to be done around educating.
On the education front, the value of you and I being educated about the macro indicators around the economy, it's so profound for a simple reason that when a politician comes to you and I, to convince that we need to vote for them, they would come with this flowery language that we will build so many houses, we'll build so many schools. And, you know, when we are better educated as the populace, we are bound to ask fundamental questions such as, given the fact that a country has grown at less than 1% over the past 10 years or so, and our debt to GDP ratio is sitting at this level, where is this money going to come from? You know, and we are able to challenge the politicians who are obviously taking advantage of the ignorance, purely because so many people, in my view, are gullible. And the value of this education will strengthen the conversation so that, politicians don't just make a flowery statement, empty statements without being challenged. Because if ordinary folks are able to challenge, say, if the economy was growing at less as at 3-4%, maybe there would be enough resources to accommodate housing that you're referring to, Minister, to accommodate healthcare provision that you're referring to, Minister, to accommodate any other provision that you're referring to. But where is the money going to come from? So those are some of the pertinent questions that ordinary folks need to be asking, and of which, in the absence of rigorous education, I think politicians are taking folks for a ride. Your take on that?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. What you're talking about is igniting critical thinking. And that is sorely lacking in the public. And I've seen a massive decline in critical thinking abilities. I don't think critical thinking is taught enough in our education facilities. It's more of a parrot learning sort of our education syllabus, where just repeat what I say and believe what I say. We're taught not to question authority where is the total opposite is true. You should always question authority. And once you've reignited critical thinking, then those questions automatically pop up. You question, you don't take anything for face value anymore. You start questioning and looking deeper into statements. I think it's an ongoing battle. Government doesn't want people to be educated in the processes, obviously, because then they start raising questions, and it becomes a problem for government. It's easy to be a dictator, even in a democracy, when you don't give people enough information and you just tell people that they must trust and believe and so on. I say never trust your government. Never trust your government, because there's always something sinister going on. And I don't say that in a mean way, but government has its own agenda, always. And it's, they're far removed from the average person, especially in urban areas or other areas, very removed from them. So they make a lot of assumptions around how policy should be and how to fix issues that are at a local level. And these solutions don't apply when put into practice. They don't work. But government will still carry on and continue in the way they are, unless people raise those issues through a critical mind and say, might work at the level that you're talking about, but at our level, it's a complete failure, and this is why. So it involves around teaching people not just to complain, but also to provide solutions, so the government can actually consider those solutions and formulate a sound policy that suits everyone.
I couldn't agree with you more. If you've just joined us, I'm having an interesting and thought-provoking conversation with Rob Hutchinson, who is the founder of Dear South Africa, which is a public participation platform that empowers citizens to have a voice on what matters in the country. I urge you to give me your thoughts of our WhatsApp line, which is 0618951019. And if you've got any thoughts and views on my X handle, I'm happy to entertain it, which is at underscore at Dr. Mbede. Rob, as we proceed, I think you've made a very important point around the absence of critical thinking amongst which would almost come across as deliberate, in my view, that government, to your point, in a context where you call upon people to be critical of agenda, which is not necessarily people's agenda, but politicians' agenda. And perhaps maybe this could partly explain why so many people take to the streets, and which is not the right way, because we have seen so much vandalism of property out of frustration. And we would obviously build sufficient insight, sufficient know on how to critically probe any policy regime or any legislation that has been presented via Green Paper, via bail and so that we avoid people going taking to the street out of frustration, which is inevitable, but to a point of destroying public property, it is a sign that we need to do more and more deep thinking, deep programming around education in terms of what public engagement looks like. And how public engagement on critical policies can actually change the landscape of any environment. Your take on that?
Yeah, once again, I agree with you perfectly there. People take to the streets out of sheer frustration, where they've requested something and it's the lack of service delivery or whatever else it may be. It's just once again focusing on promises not being met. But that again, it's I have a different view on it, and I think it's also around educating the people, but from a slightly different way. It's all well and good going to a riot or protesting and so on, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really achieve anything, because it's gone so far past the process that it's almost impossible to go back there. And people are unaware that they can actually have their say and influence the policy decisions before they are made. Now, it's incredibly difficult to undo policy. It costs millions of rand in court, and it's very rarely, if ever, successful. But that being said, if people protest online through sharing their voice, or in written comments to their local government or to national government on a policy that's been presented, this is what's going to come. This is what the impact of it will be. And then counteract that and show government, well, maybe the outcome won't be that. Maybe you're missing a point here. And our environment, again, is slightly different, and you need to modify the policy to suit us as well. Otherwise, there will be riots. So it works both ways. Government needs to understand that they need to encourage public participation. They need to educate people about the bills and also the consequences thereof. If this bill is implemented, what will the outcome be? And not promises and dreams and so on, but the actual outcome of what will happen. So it's education from both sides. Government is getting there. They've got a big drive on focusing on public education now. There's a public education office in Parliament, which does quite a bit of outstanding work as far as educating people on the importance of public participation and about new bills and whatever that are coming out. But it's still not anywhere near where it should be. So people do take to the streets afterwards because they're unaware of these processes and unaware of the importance that they can make. It's a long process, like I keep saying. So it's and always you have new people coming into your democracy, those people that have never said anything before, and you know they hear about what's going on, this new policy, and the word spreads and then people come and participate. But even then, those people need to be educated into knowing that they can do this regularly on any issues that suit them. But again, you know, the drawback then is participation, what I call participation fatigue, where people participate so often and nothing happens because this process takes quite a while. And people want instant results. That's also why they take to the streets and protest, is because our protest is over, we hand in a mandate, and now we want you to change it the next day. It doesn't happen. So people get more and more frustrated. More protests happen, and eventually you have looting and destructive behavior out of sheer frustration or lack of understanding of the process that gets government has to undergo. But that can all be avoided through constructive feedback the whole way, which is sorely lacking in government. Even on the public participation side, there's a lack of feedback from government. Where are we in this process? Have you considered the voice of this community or this public or even this individual? And where are we? What's the way forward? What's the next step? That we don't see any feedback from government. I believe that if we did see that feedback, there'd be a drastic reduction in the frustration from public, and we'd see more engagement from the public in these type of processes.
I couldn't agree with you more. Perhaps maybe one of the critical points that you have obviously presented to us is participation fatigue, because people get very frustrated and obviously they take out to the street and do a lot of damage in the process. But there's also an assumption that the state has sufficient capacity in terms of advocacy and having enough resources. And to your point about the office in Parliament, which is probably not adequately staffed and which sits at the apex, and it doesn't really filter down to provinces, to local government, and so on and so forth. So those are some of the challenges. But when we come back, I want us to we want to get a bit of insight from you on whatever some of the achievements which DS South Africa has managed to amass in fostering the culture of critical thinking, and perhaps maybe even reversing some of the policies that were not properly formulated. Let's take a break. We'll be back in a second.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Mbele. We're having a very interesting conversation with Rob Hutchison, who is the founder of DS South Africa, a platform that amplifies the voice of ordinary citizen in policy-making process. Before we took that break, Rob gave us a food for thought in terms of what are the challenges that he's experienced in terms of getting a participation at the level which is required. And obviously, we have understood from his perspective how complex getting the public participating. But in the same token, the impression that we are getting from him, I'm getting from him, is that in absence of rigorous education to public, it is very difficult to expect a positive outlook. People take to the street purely because they are very frustrated, and it's incumbent on government to educate people in advance so that we have sufficient alignment, so to speak, and are able to, because it's very costly to his point, it's very costly to change legislation once it has been done. Talking of legislation, Rob, one of the biggest or controversial pieces has been the Bella Bill, which is now an act, Basic Education Amendment Act, which has sparked a significant public debate and varying opinions across the country. As someone who advocates for public participation in governance, how would you evaluate the process of public consultation and engagement around the Bella Bill, which is now an act?
I think the Bella Bill was a great example of public participation. The process took many years to go through, many consultations with public, with special interest groups, with experts in the field, education institutions, and so on, and it was an extremely thorough process that the Department of Basic Education undertook. There, there was a lot of engagement, public hearings, opportunities to interview individuals, and of course the public had an opportunity to have their say several times, both in National Assembly, the NCRP. Then it went back to National Assembly again, and you know, it was a public participation process all along the way. However, only a few amendments were made, and a lot of the major concerns raised by all groups were not actually addressed, which raises further issues as, does government actually listen to the people? And again, does the voice of the people actually matter? Well, I would say yes, it does, and it definitely did make a difference to the bill. Several amendments, constructive amendments, were made. However, not all of the demands of the public were met. And I think there again, it's part of the democratic process. I mean, if one person raises or one group raises an issue and that's not addressed, but the rest of the group, 90% of the other people, are in favor of this already proposed bill, then government has to go with that. Although that is not always the case. There's sometimes a international influence or a think tank, or a lot of the times, say, the UN or someone else will have an outside influencing policy, which government has to go through. But however, the Bella Bill, I think it will still be an ongoing process. The government did recently, or the presidency actually granted another, I think it was 90 days where they can, or 3 months, 90 days where they can send it back to Parliament and just discuss a few points. However, the outcome was exactly the same. So it has been signed into law. It is an act now, as you say, but it still remains a great example of public participation and how government does actually consider the voices. I mean, that's why it took several years for this bill to go through. However, I still believe there will be core challenges facing it, as that there are still some controversial issues which government hasn't quite fully explained as to why they did not consider them.
I couldn't agree with you more that obviously we have had a very challenging environment, expressed via the contestation of the Bella Bill Act, which suggests a triumph when you look at democracy. That's something that is very positive, that a ruling party or government, you know, does not or cannot willy-nilly make a legislation that is not being challenged, which also means that there's a need for investment in lobby groups. There's a need for investment in NGOs that are research-based and that provide evidence which is being presented, because when you make, I would imagine, when you make submissions to Parliament, you have to obviously you have some kind of case law, some kind of research, with sufficient statistics and benchmarking outlook to make a convincing case, because you don't just simply change on the basis of rhetoric. How important is it that listeners who are keen in advancing democratic ethos are beginning to invest in in civil society organizations such as yours, as an example, in strengthening democratic voice, because that's essentially what you are doing. You are strengthening democratic agenda by ensuring that every single voice count. And part of that, it's obviously a dedicated process which involves a lot of research at some point, lots of engagements that are obviously cost implications. How important is it that we need to strengthen this particular NGOs that are keen in strengthening democracy? Because we all know that if in absence of a voice of dissent that is structured, that is evidence-based, we're more likely to deteriorate into chaos in the form of dictatorship, even under the guise of democracy.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what will happen. So you need an opposition voice all the time. And it can't just come from a opposition political party, especially now with the formation of the GNU. It's very difficult for anybody to oppose government policy when you have a government of national unity, because you're essentially opposing yourself. And we've seen that with the Democratic Alliance, that have abandoned several cases, now legal cases, one of them being the National Health Insurance. Democratic Alliance, as soon as they're appointed as ministerial positions, my first question was, right, how are they going to continue with their court cases against certain policies? And to no one's surprise, they dropped the cases. So that's where civil society has to now step in and say, hang on a second, we are the only opposition that remains in our democracy, because we have a government of national unity, which I have to unite in a certain direction. So it's extremely important to listen to civil society organizations, especially those that provide constructive criticism of government policies. And once again, it boils down to that critical thinking aspect, where you have to take into account all the voices coming from different places, because not all civil society groups will agree on the same policies. You have those who are in favor of it, and you have those who will always oppose it for one reason or another. A good example is climate change. There's a lot of groups that oppose the government policies that have been put forward with carbon taxes and so on. Yet there's a significant number of groups that say, yes, we have to do it, all providing valid reasons on both sides. But then again, it's up to them to provide education, supporting evidence, research, and valid documents that the public can easily digest and decide for themselves what is good based on evidence-based decisions, rather than just feelings or emotions or so on. It has to be evidence-based. So, civil society groups are extremely important. It's vital to support them so they can conduct their research, provide the services, and so on. And it's not always financial support. It's participating, having your say, giving them a reason to go on. A lot of groups, civil society groups, receive grants, international grants, and that keeps them running on their core costs and so on, infrastructure costs. So you don't always need to support them financially, but rather just get involved with what they're saying, spread their message, criticize them as well.
Absolutely.
By all means, criticize them and help them become better. As I said, civil society groups are now the only opposition to government. So we have to focus more, or the general public needs to focus more on getting their news and information from both government and civil society, and comparing notes, and then making factual-based decisions.
I couldn't agree with you more. On that note, let's take a last quick break as we gravitate towards the end of the show, which is quite remarkable. We'll be back in a second.
This is Beyond Governance with Dr. Nimrod Mbele on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. It is now 7 minutes to 7 o'clock. We are literally 7 minutes towards the finishing line. You know, this is Beyond Governance, and I'm joined by Rob Hutchison, who is the founder of DSR Africa, a platform that amplifies the voice of ordinary citizens in policymaking processes. As we are rounding up, you know, a very interesting and educational conversation with Rob here, what would you say your highlights have been in advocating for change in the context of legislation that are better informed and aligned with citizens? Your highlight?
I think my favorite highlight, or should I say the top highlight, my brightest highlight, is, if I don't know what the proper term is. I'd say the spy bill. The spy bill was quite a controversial piece of legislation that was brought about in response to the RICA Act and a few other pieces of legislation that the National Security Agency and government was forced to change due to a constitutional court challenge, where they were monitoring certain journalists illegally and without a warrant. So it required a change in that. And what the state decided to do was rewrite the policy to circumvent that constitutional court ruling and still continue as they were. However, they presented it as a state security issue and international trading and so on. And the public caught onto it, the journalists caught onto it and figured out what it was. There were some great presentations to Parliament around this Bible. And the outcome was favorable. The public raised some terrific arguments. There was a huge number of people who had their say. I think in total, Parliament received over 100,000 comments and submissions from the public. And they shelved it at the end of the day. It hasn't gone through. It's still sitting on the shelf there. And by all definitions, it has been completely withdrawn. And it also opened government and Parliament's eyes to the underhanded dealings that were attempted to be brought about by the National State Security Agency. And, you know, circumventing a constitutional court ruling is clever. I'll give them credit for that. But if it's kind of a great case of if we've broken the law, well, then let's just change the law so we don't act it, so we haven't broken it. And that's exactly what they were doing. So that was stopped in its tracks. And I think that's a great example of democracy at work, public participation, creating a massive influence on that, and also the public working together. And kudos to the journalists for educating the public on the dangers of this bill. And not only the dangers, but they did also highlight the good points of it and bringing it to light that that's exactly what they're doing, is circumventing the constitutional court ruling. And if there wasn't that education by the journalists and by other civil society groups, then the spy bill would have been signed into law.
Absolutely.
But thankfully, it was good. There's quite a few others, but I think that one stands out the most for me.
Absolutely. Perhaps maybe I'm going to ask Craig that we have a yet another follow-up, for there are a lot of issues that are important that perhaps you and I in the best interest of you know, developing substantial and substantive in education to the public, you and I can rekindle again. Once again, thank you very much for coming through.
Thank you very much, Dr. It was great. Great to be on.
Absolutely. That was Rob Hutchison, who's the a very interesting journalist, I would imagine, or social entrepreneur, who's the founder of DSR Africa, a platform that amplifies the voice of ordinary citizens in policymaking. We have had, obviously, a beautiful insight, and we're quite grateful for his enlightenment, so to speak, so that we're able to reorient South Africa in a position which we can all be better of, or we can all be proud of. To the listeners, let's this conversation has been quite remarkable, and I think we have to obviously invite him once again, because this obviously it's not an event, but it's a process, and some of very interesting insights emerge from our conversation, and which require further combing and further analysis so that you and I are better informed. For there are a lot of legislation that are forthcoming. We've got local government elections that are coming. So how do we strengthen democracy by voicing and not just staying back? Because staying back is also not a solution. And complaining is not a solution, but we have to do something. There will be obviously public hearings. There will be interviews. There will be public engagements, which are quite useful. Thanks to Rob in terms of the enlightenment. Craig, thank you very much. As we parting ways, it has been absolutely beautiful. Let's do this again next week. Please drive safely and be kind to one another. Shalom.